Wilkinson. I'm going to share a little trip I had to an Eskimo village, a Nupiat village. In Canada, don't use the word Eskimo. But in the U.S. and Alaska, they don't mind being called Eskimos, but they prefer to be called by their tribal name. And the one I'm going to talk about, Brevig Mission, is the Nupiat. I'm wearing a parkie, and later on there's a picture that will show better what the women generally wear. This one, I was a volunteer at the Anchorage Visitor Center, and we had to wear these at the Visitor Center, so that's why I have that. Well, we're going to take a trip to Brevig Mission. Anchorage is down here. Had to fly to Nome, drove to Teller, and then you have to take a boat across this arm of the Bering Sea to Brevig Mission. Now, it has a very interesting history. In 1892, the American government brought over reindeer to that area. And because Siberia is so near, the reindeer were brought from Siberia, and they brought some Siberians along to teach the natives how to herd reindeer. They had caribou, and that was one of their main foods, but the caribou were so elusive. They kind of would go where they wanted to, where the reindeer had been domesticated. So, looked like a good plan, but the Siberians were almost like the boogeyman. You could tell kids, well, the Siberians will get you. And they often came over and raided in that area. Right here are the Diomede Islands, little and big, and from this one you can see Russia. So it is possible to see Russia from there. Alaska is the furthest north, west, and east of any of the states, because here's the international date line. The Diomede Islands right there, and if you go down here to the Aleutian Islands, some of the Aleutians are on the other side of the date line. So it's the most north, the most west, and the most east of any of our states. Flew from Anchorage to Nome, and that was an interesting experience. It is not inexpensive. But if you are Alaskan and you fly Alaskan Airlines, you can take along three pieces of luggage. And it was interesting to see what they had. Huge, going to Costco or Walmart, of toilet paper, diapers, all of those things that they can get, but they are so expensive. Or maybe a big box of fresh fruit. So that's Brevig.
And where's the Arctic Circle?
The Arctic Circle is just above it, okay. Here. So it is south of the Arctic Circle. Well, as I said, they had those Siberians and that wasn't working out at all. So the United States government decided they would get some Lapps to come to teach them how to herd the reindeer. And they did find five families and a single man in Lapland, who said they would come if they had a Lutheran pastor. So the government's job was to find a Lutheran pastor. And in Minnesota, Brevig, who had been born and raised in Norway, then emigrated to Minnesota, accepted the call to go to the, at that time, the Teller Reindeer Station. And in addition to being the pastor for these Lapp families, he was to be the teacher at the government school they were going to open. And he had taught for 5 years in Minnesota, and he had teaching credentials. So he got married. They wanted him to be married. And the Brevigs moved to the Teller Reindeer Station.
What year was this?
1894.
Okay.
Did he know his wife before he got his circle?
Well, I think maybe so, but I'm not sure.
Hopefully.
So, of course, there wasn't any road then, and as I showed you here, there's this road from Nome to Teller. And by the way, it was an expensive flight. I had to pay over $500 for my flight there. I could have gone to L.A., Philadelphia, many places less for less. But that's a little bit of the background. I wanted to find out where that sign was. Well, they come in on a main street, and someone told me, well, if I went down this back road and thing, and that's where the end of the Iditarod sled dog race is stored in the summertime.
Oh, so they put it across Main Street? And
they put it across Main Street.
Oh.
When the Iditarod is run. We stayed the night in Nome. We slept in the Lutheran church there, not in the sanctuary part, but in there, the hall part. And they had students going to a youth convention, and they bought mattresses for them. So we got to sleep on these bits of foam mattress, which was wonderful. Well, we took the ride, and this is the Teller Lutheran Church. While we were in Brevig Mission, about half of Teller burned down. In the middle of the night, there was a phone call, and when we looked out the window, we could see across the way the flames. The Lutheran Church did not burn. Well, from Teller, then we had to take a boat. And this is the calm side. It was very, very rough before we got into Brevig, and the motor kept kicking out. But we made it, and the first thing we saw was the fish drying racks. This is at a fish camp. And many of the villagers were out at fish camp. There was a great run of silvers at Coho right at that time. And so people were in and out of the village. But here it is on the drying racks. And the year before, the run hadn't been too good, but this year they knew they would have enough for winter.
What time of year was this?
This was in July. First introduction to the Lutheran Church in Brevig Mission. And the reindeer and sheep sitting there drying out. And this is the picture. The bottom is the church, the top part is where the pastor lives. This is new housing, Habitat for Humanity. There is running water in Brevig, and there is electricity. Teller has electricity, but they only have running water at the washateria. Brevig has a school, a post office, a store, and a washateria. Something very important. This is the old housing. And as I showed you before, this is the new housing. About 400 people live there. Well, what we went for is a Bible school. There is, for 7 years, a group from Central Lutheran in Anchorage has gone up to teach Bible school. And as you look at this picture and think of now, I want to read you about the first Christmas that the Brevigs spent in a Teller reindeer station. The season of Christmas was drawing near, and with it came thoughts of a Christmas tree. But whence should a Christmas tree be found in a country where there are no trees? Indeed, one could find in the valley a species of dwarf willow, small bushes which maybe would attain a height of 2 or 3 feet. Our desire for a Christmas tree was soon made known to the Indian boy who came from the district of Tanana River, which is a tributary to the Yukon. He was immediately willing to help us solve our difficulty. He had participated in several Christmas festivals where the Christmas tree had been used, namely at the Christian mission from whence he came. The natives also told that 2 days' journey inland, there was a hill where there grew several trees with beautiful branches and as tall as a house, some 12 to 15 feet high. Mr. Kilman, taking the sleigh and 4 reindeer, accompanied by 1 Lap and a native guide from that district who spoke English after a fashion, set out to find the tree. They journeyed for 70 miles into the interior where they found 4 birch trees. The largest of these they brought home. Just think, they found 4 trees and took one of them. That place was given the name Birch Hill. It lies about 15 miles southeast from the mission station at Igloo. Christmas week came with mild weather, but cloudy and rainy, so that almost all of the snow disappeared. The birch tree was set up and decorated. We used simple decorations made from popcorn and candy. In the vicinities, there were about 200 natives, and our idea was that each one would receive a small delicacy as a reminder of the first Christmas celebration. Our women were busy baking simple rolls, which they covered with sugar. The natives understood that something unusual was in preparation, and as the sense of inquisitiveness was well developed among them, they began to appear at the station very early at daybreak, which is 10 o'clock about that time of the year. Yeah. Our house was completely surrounded, and the natives were in our way everywhere. We declared that they should not see anything before all the preparations were finished and the Christmas candles lit. In order to remove the people for a while, we prepared small packages consisting of beans, rice, flour, and a piece of sugar, one for each house, and told them these packages would be delivered to them by us to their houses. We believed that the crowd would come to see what they received, but they outsmarted us and sent one from each house to receive the gift. At 2 o'clock in the afternoon, it was already dark. Everything was ready, and the door to the schoolroom opened. It was a joy to see their large dark eyes bright with wonder, mingled with fear as they beheld the tree and the lights. Their fear came from their uncertainty as what the evil spirits would say to their participation in such a festival. Christmas hymns were sung in the Norse language. The Christmas gospel was read, and a short Christmas sermon preached. This was especially for the edification of the Norsemen in the Laps who were present. Thereupon, Mrs. Brevig, he always calls his wife Mrs. Brevig or Mrs. T. Brevig, sang 2 Christmas hymns in the English language. Then, with Martin as interpreter, I told the natives the story of the birth of Jesus. This was the first time the Christmas message had been preached to the Eskimos. Since no unpleasant effects resulted, which might be ascribed to the vengeful spirit, the natives received a keen appreciation and desire for Christmas. The following year, 2 months before Christmas, many came to the station and eagerly inquired, "How many sleeps until Christmas?" Thus Christmas became like a ray of light in their otherwise dark and somber life. Only human beings with the Eskimos' slow and good-natured mental characteristics would be at all suited to attempt to live under the conditions that exist there. Even the most hardy white man under such conditions simply give up all hope in the struggle to exist. So that's the story of the first Christmas there. The woman sitting in this picture is a social worker in the village, and the children are busy with crafts. Bible school started in the afternoon because none of the children got up until about noon. And it was there were a total of 60 who came, but some days it was 20 and some days it was 30. And sometimes the children would have to be out at fish camp because sometimes when they pulled in their nets, they would have up to 100 fish. And they all had to be gutted and hung up to dry. So they needed all the labor that they could have from the house. And some of the teenage boys who were a little too old, they would hang around, and these two especially did, and they were real delighted to help out. And I took this picture, but then they wanted another one, and so this is the second one that they posed for. Playing games was part of the Bible school. And one afternoon, just about 4 o'clock, when it was going to be the end of the Bible school day, just before dismissal, a buzz was going through the village, and we heard they've gotten a whale. The whale was shot and then harpooned so they could get the ropes on to pull it in. But everyone knew they'd gotten one because they called in with their cell phones. This was the first time in 20 years that Brevi Mission had gotten a whale, because right at the, I don't have my map up there anymore, but right at the inlet there was a Coast Guard station that sent out signals all the time. And that Coast Guard station had just recently been closed, and people saw the whales coming in them. So evidently the sound, even though it was above the water, was something that had bothered them. So there was great excitement as everyone went down to the village. And you can see the white there where they're pulling it in. It was a minke whale. They're not the huge whales. And as I said, it was the first time in about 20 years they'd gotten one, and I was quite amazed that the young men knew exactly what to do to cut it up. And then all the meat was piled in a pile on the beach. The fat layer on top, the muktuk, is especially prized. And then people came down to the beach when they had it all cut up, and it was divided among the whole village. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just the people who went out to fish. It belonged to the whole village.
What was the temperature about this time?
This was very interesting because it got up to 70 degrees there, and it was in the 50s in Anchorage those days. So we were telling people we had to go north. As I said, the kids didn't get up in the morning. I took this picture on July 16th at exactly 12 midnight. And there is the sun. A village where there is an airport, but for the most part, no one can come to or leave from. So things were left all over. This was a little pond where water came in that the kids went swimming, and who knows when some of that clothes was left there. And there were bicycles all over, as there were four-wheelers. And I saw, I'm sure, kids as young as 8 driving those four-wheelers. And I saw no one wear a helmet on bikes or four-wheelers, and they were just all over.
Did this make you think of Holden Village?
No.
Well, just in the sense that they're dependent on something, some way to get everything in. They're isolated.
In that way, yes.
They're dependent on each other. They don't quite have as many tourists.
And I imagine when they go out from Holden, they get the big things of toilet paper and diapers also, but they can bring them on the ferry and not have to bring them on the airplane. That is her baby. She's probably 15 or 16.
So is Mary totally within the village?
No, but it's a lot within the Seward Peninsula. Mm-hmm. This where we were staying up above in the pastor's quarters, people would come all hours of day and night selling things. The store ran out of cash when we were there because people would write checks, and being no bank or anything, the people would take their checks to the store to get the cash for them. But they came selling handicrafts. This woman has Christmas ornaments made out of seal skin, and my one granddaughter is Sydney Star, so I try to get her a star ornament for the tree every year. And she's holding the star that she made. This young man, and I'm sorry the picture isn't better, but he is holding a bracelet that he has made out of ivory. And he also had some carvings. Very, very talented young man. He went to school at Mount Edgecombe, which is a boarding school near Sitka, and told us that was the best 2 years of his life. From the past, I think boarding schools have a real negative connotation. He said, I met people from all over. And he just went on, and he said he got to go into the archives. And on his cell phone, he has pictures of that whole area and where old houses and settlements are. So he digs there for ivory. Now, if it's over so old, it isn't legal because then it's an artifact. But if it's a little newer, they can use it for carving.
How much of their income would they rely on with these?
Some of them, that's it.
That's their whole income.
And then it's subsistence. largely salmon, reindeer. And they still do have a reindeer herd. And there was a big controversy at the time I was there. They were saying the price of reindeer is too high. And because the price had been set so high, they didn't sell as much as they'd like to. And also, part of their reindeer herd got away. And so the government gave that reindeer herd, it was supposed to be loose, to some other people, and they said, no, that was theirs. And there was a big controversy going on with another village and the other people who had gotten the reindeer. So life is different. He said the best ivory is from the walrus, and from the mastodons it's too soft, and it doesn't carve well. And I didn't even know you could go along the beach and pick up.
Would they use the reindeer for meat or milk or what?
Meat
everything?
And milk and... the
fur.
The reindeer hide and the antlers. Antlers sell well to tourists who come to Anchorage. These are two little guys. The one in the blue shirt, his mother made a pair of mukluks that I bought to give to my great-grandson who is going to be born next month. This is the grave of Mrs. Brevig. She just had a cross there, and then some people in the lower 48 gave the money to make a gravestone. Brevig was much loved by the natives, and he was given the name Pawrock, a leader, and was adopted into the Eskimo tribe. And this is the cemetery. I tried to get the statistics again because I forgot them, but the pastor who's there now has been there 22 years, and he has conducted a lot of funerals. Less than half were for natural causes. The biggest cause of death is suicide. And the second largest is accidents. When we were there, a body washed up on shore, and it was badly decomposed, and I suppose the fish had eaten part of it or something, and we were advised not to go there. I wouldn't have wanted to, but the Coast Guard came in, and when they finally identified it, it was of a young man who had tried to go from Teller to Brevig Mission by snowmobile, or snow machine as they call them in Alaska, and had gone through the ice. There was another man who had disappeared at the same time, probably walking on the ice, and it was identified as the young man who'd gone through in the snow machine. And I was talking to the pastor, and I said, oh, that must be really hard in the family. And he said, no, it was a relief to them because they had found the body and they could have some finality. He said, it's the other family that still doesn't know that is suffering more. The pastor has both Teller and Brevig Mission, so one of the services is in the late morning and one is in the evening. He has to go back and forth by boat.
How long is that ride?
It depends. When we went, it took well over an hour because it was rough on that side, and when we went back, it was probably 35 minutes. How cold is the... I am swimming in the Bering Sea.
There you go.
It's one of my 80 before 80. I would have never done it, but I could put it on the list of something I have done. And there are the three of us who did it on the 9th. And it is cold. But it wasn't that you thought you were going to freeze to death. I wouldn't have wanted to stay in too long. One of the things we did was after a Bible school was over in the evening, we had teenage night. And sometimes we played cards. And one night they demonstrated some of the native games. This is the seal hop. You can see he has his knuckles like this, his feet in the back. I'm holding my hand like that because you can't have your butt up any higher than that. And they hop along. I don't have a picture of the thing I think is the most astounding, but they have a 1 foot and a 2 foot kick with a ball hanging, and they can kick above where my hand is with either 1 or 2 feet. Not at Brevig, but in Anchorage, I got to see a world record set at a high school meet. And from all the villages, they come in for that and have a competition. And the thing I loved about it is you'll see kids from different places telling, well, if you do this or if you do that, a lot of cooperation, a lot of helping each other, even though they want to set the record. I don't see that at any kind of meets here in the lower 48, but a lot of competition. And
they must be in pretty good shape, huh?
A lot of them are. And the games say, if we had some kids here, I would have them do the stick pull. But that's, you put your feet together, hang on to a stick, and pull that way to develop those muscles. Tug of war is a very popular game, and that's to pull the whales in. There's the ear pull, where you put string around your ear and the other person, and then you pull. And they have several of things like that that are made for enduring pain. They have a jump where you scissor jump and see how far you can get in three, and that was developed from jumping from iceberg to iceberg. So all the games have a purpose, but I think it would be tremendous to see them in the Olympics.
Well, they have a Winter Olympics among the natives there.
Yes.
And we saw that when we were in Alaska.
And that's Greenland, Canada, and Alaska. Yeah. But the high school one is just the Alaskan high schools. This is the group of people that were there to put on the Bible school. Most of the women are wearing cusbucks, which is a cotton and with a ruffle around the bottom, and the native woman in front. It was a tremendous experience for me. But they don't get any Sunday school there. We were coming in to do the Bible school for them. Was it paternalistic? Were we empowering? Or were we doing it in place of the people? And I was thinking, the church there was started at about the same time as the one in Tanzania where I was. Recently, the first native pastor was ordained. And granted, Alaska isn't big. But when we were in Tanzania in the 50s, all the pastors were native. Some of the bishops were, but all the pastors were. And the church there has grown. In Tanzania, it's 5,600,000. And some people say, well, the role of a pastor is maybe higher, and in the Eskimos, no one does that. But there were questions for me. And I thought, when we're there, why are we doing it all? Why aren't we decided the curriculum. And I thought, why aren't we asking them what stories they want for their children? What are the hymns they want? Big questions I had. I loved my experience, and I loved being there. But what's the answer? And isn't that a lot of things we have in our Christian life and on our road? What should we be doing? I took this picture. I think it's indicative of the transition. You see the bicycle, the dog sled, the Arctic cat snow machine that's covered, way down by the water, the salmon hanging on the fish rack and sitting by it, the storage tanks that they use for their oil to run the electricity. Whoops. Uh, I don't know, it was a lot of talk about it in Alaska. I don't know if they were here or not, that the ice formed too soon and they couldn't get the fuel into Nome, and they had to get a Russian icebreaker to come first to bring the boat in. $5.94 a gallon for gasoline. At the Alaskan Women's Convention, there were some women there from Nome and said, we would not have been able to stay in Nome. We would not have had enough money to stay warm during the winter. It was $8 a gallon for fuel oil. But Cesar Chavez from Venezuela sent aid. So we could buy the fuel oil. Not Alaska, which has a huge surplus. Not the United States, but Cesar Chavez. You know, I think here an elder woman who has seen children die by suicide, natural causes, what's in her mind? She was so gracious to us. And what is the future going to be for her? Can the village survive? Can it thrive? What's the direction?
Do the natives still get a subsidy from the government based from the oil profits like they used years ago?
No, but everyone in Alaska gets distribution from permanent fund. Last year it was $1,117, but that's for everyone.
Everybody gets that, okay.
The governor, the oil people,
I see.
And the natives there. They do, by treaty, get health care. So there was a good clinic with a nurse practitioner. And right now there is a big controversy because they have dental assistants in a lot of the villages, and some of the dentists are saying they shouldn't be allowed to do all these procedures. And if the dental assistants don't do it, it won't get done, and they'd have to fly to Anchorage, which is really expensive.
How much road do they have to use their machines and cars?
There was a little trail out to the airport, and kind of round in town. Not very much.
So they don't use too much gas for vehicles, it's mostly...
Not in Brevig, no. But if they want to go to Anchorage or something, which you can do in the summertime if you get to Teller, but that road isn't open in the winter. They don't plow it all winter.
Do you think when these young people finish schooling there, do many of them go on, and do they come back? Or?
What's true in a lot of villages is that the women leave and the men stay. When I was in Pakistan, it was exactly the opposite. The women stayed in the village after being educated, but the men leave. But the men have the fishing, the hunting, the reindeer herding. So there are more things for them to do, but the business of closing the post offices. A lot of these villages don't have enough people to make it economically viable, but the post office is the lifeline of the village. Your medications come by post. Your toilet paper, maybe. All those things, especially in the winter, they keep the airport open. And the same way with giving airline subsidies. Again, a lifeline, those airports. The little town I grew up in, Iowa, has a lovely post office. There's one 3 miles away. There's one 7 miles away. They could close the post office in Moena, and no one would really notice much difference. If they would close the post office in Brevig, Mission. Oh, and I need to tell you about the name. It was Teller and Teller Reindeer Station. And in the 1960s, they thought those names were too similar, and they named it Brevig Mission, mm-hmm. after Brevig, who was so beloved.
Mm-hmm. And how close is the nearest village?
Well, it would be Teller, across the...
Across the river.
Back to the beginning here.
You know, I do the national assessment in Iowa. I was complaining one time because we have to test in February and it's flu season and it's snow season. And I was talking to the Alaska representative and she says, well, when we test, it's caribou season and some of my testers get snowed in. I've got no problems.
You see, from Nome, you can take a road up that way or you could go that way, but there really are no villages in that inner part there. Shishmaref, which is up north there, Shishmaref has almost 800 people. Kids love it if they can get away to go to Shish. That it's
so they can drive from Teller to Nome, is that right?
Yes,
So do they keep a vehicle there then? Or I mean, how do they? They have to go by boat from the Mission to Teller, right?
Mm-hmm.
So do they keep?
The villagers don't have a vehicle.
So they just.
They will find someone in Teller.
There you go. Okay.
The pastor leaves his vehicle in Teller.
Okay.
A couple of the school teachers have vehicles. The nurse has a vehicle, and they leave theirs in Teller.
Sure. Do they live there then?
They live in Brevig, Mission.
Brevig, okay.
And I saw a thing on average income, which is kind of interesting because the female average income is higher than the males, but that's because there are the school teachers, the nurse, the post mistress. Those jobs are women, and so their average income is higher than the men's because most of the men don't have that kind of job.
Does the village have internet access?
The pastor had sporadic internet access, and the school has computers and internet. I don't know of any. I didn't know of any homes that had it, but they could have. But they all had either cell phones or iPads.
And
going back to this picture, there's the dog sled, and there were dog teams. The dogs are penned up. There were dog teams. How do you go from a dog sled to an iPad? And what's the future?
I have a question about their nutrition, their overall health, how they exercise. Is exercise a priority?
No. They're going everywhere by four-wheelers if possible. You don't see people out for a walk. The children's teeth are terrible. Soda pop is a big thing. There was a woman, she didn't go the time I did. She went and during the staff from Central's during the prayer time, she said, and please God, take the suckers out of their mouths. But you'll see young children with silver teeth and their baby teeth, just to keep it. So the traditional diet was all right, but with pop, candy, those kinds of things. It isn't a healthy diet. Salmon and berries, they're both very good for them. And the berries were just about to get ripe when we were there. So they're, and it's interesting, I think, when you see the obituaries of Native women, it almost always said, and she enjoyed this, that, and the other, and berry picking. Mm-hmm. So berry picking, and I don't know that it'd be that pleasant because the mosquitoes and little black flies are pretty bad.
What kind of berries?
Salmon berry is the main thing. Blueberries grow more, there are some, but blueberries grow more where there are trees. So salmon berry is the big thing.
What is that?
It's rather like a large yellow raspberry.
They have them here, they're called cascade berries.
Yeah, they have salmon berries here in the mountains, don't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, along the ocean. I mean, where they're all over Washington State.
Oh.
Oh.
How about alcohol?
Brenwig and Teller are both dry communities. I did not see anyone who had been drinking, but there was a young man who did the drumming for the dance who had just gotten out of jail for a fight he was in when he was drunk. So alcoholism is a big problem in Anchorage, especially. And what happens is some of these people from the dry villages start drinking. They end up on the street in Anchorage and their villages won't let them back in. Mm-hmm. Unless they stop drinking, and a lot of them don't. So there are a lot of problems, and yet it's a beautiful, beautiful place. And with beautiful, beautiful children.
Yes.
I lived in Alaska for many years, and I have lived there for 7 years now. And I taught preschool, and I love that picture of the little girl. I had so many cute little Native kids, and I just thank you for sharing that. That's just, oh, I could hug her.
And you know, generally, that was the... that's what you saw in
right,
the children.
Just,
very friendly, very curious.
Right.
They always wanted to know mm-hmm. how old you were, if you had a honey, and about your children. But the big thing was if you had a honey. So I heard the bell ring. Thank you very much.